My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Girl, how hard do you think it would be to be real-life friends with Amber Fry?
Not that hard for you.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think she'd like me?
I think you'd be friends with her. I think she'd like you, but I think you have a way of making things happen.
Oh, that's nice. I don't know if you mean it nice, but it's
nice. I do mean it nice.
Okay, great. Well, then I'll take it as a compliment.
Okay, great.
Hi, Jillian Bentivali.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Oh, my goodness. What's going on, girl?
Oh, just everything. Absolutely
everything. Everyone all at once?
Riled up over here.
Oh, my goodness. Fam, just a reminder, our interview with Skye Borgman, the director of this documentary about Lacey Peterson, is live right now on Patreon for anybody at the $5 level and above.
Yeah.
We have Drag Bingo coming up on October 23rd. It's our spooky Drag Bingo.
Yeah, it's going to be a costume party.
So are you coming in costume?
I don't know what the costume's going to be, but I'll dress up more than I usually do, for sure.
Maybe I'll do the sexy pizza. Should I do that?
Too sexy pizza.
Okay, great.
Maybe I'll just do like black lipstick or something. I don't know, but I'll do something, which I've done before anyway.
You know what? That's very you. I love it very much.
I'm gonna figure something out.
Right.
But if you don't want to come in costume or be on camera, that is also totally fine.
1,000,000%. Just come to Drag Bingo because it is the app. Can you imagine? Like, it's October. You get to spend some of it with a drag queen.
Are you kidding me? So much fun.
Oh my God. All right. Tell the people what we're doing today, girl.
So we're doing American Murder, Lacey Peterson. It is on Netflix.
Yeah. So the way that we did this, fam, we did the first two episodes as our episode one. This is covering episode 3 called Nothing Can Change the Truth, and that is our episode 2.
Can I start this
Please.
One off?
Please. I would have it no other way.
Thank you. Because the last episode ended with the cops saying, like, everything we have is circumstantial. Like, all of Scott's lies and all that stuff. I just want to say something I'm sick of.
Yeah.
This whole, like, oh, it's just circumstantial evidence, like, it's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, 100 instances of circumstantial evidence should not be ignored.
I agree.
Like, we're doing all this mental gymnastics, again, for someone, for a Chris Watts Scott Peterson. Like, this kind of thing happens all the time, unfortunately. Well, and I find it insulting that, like, to Lacey and Connor and families and anyone who's ever been a victim or a survivor. But, like, you know who else only had circumstantial evidence?
Who?
Robert Durst.
Yeah.
Like, where are the shitty hot takes about his innocence? And, like, Chris Watts, there's no forensic evidence in the Watts house. We know that he did it because he told us. But this whole, like, if Scott killed Lacey in the house, where's the evidence? There's no, like, you know what's considered direct evidence?
Please.
Eyewitness testimony.
Right.
Which we know is extremely problematic. And here's a quote from the internet, which I know, be careful. But do you know, studies have shown that mistaken eyewitness testimony accounts for about half of all wrongful convictions.
Wow.
So, like, in most cases, there's no direct evidence at all.
You know, for me, though, I keep saying it. It's the lack of direct evidence coupled with what I see as big major questions.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right. And, like, we'll get to it at the end, but, like, Scott's family is now trying to get evidence tested. And I will always support testing evidence. But, like, you kind of can't scream about how the entire case is based on circumstantial evidence, ignore 200 pieces of it, and then rely on the results of one piece of circumstantial evidence. That's not how this works.
No,
either we're doing
totally
it all or we're not doing
it. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But and then you also have to, like, I don't think we do this enough. It's like, if it's not Scott, then who? You know what I mean?
Like, well, yes. I know. Yes. Who? Not the burglars. I'm sorry.
I know.
Not the Hamburglar either.
As far as we know.
Does
he have an alibi for the night?
I mean, I don't know, girl. At this point, who the hell knows?
Who the hell knows? So, it's San Francisco Bay. It's April 14th, 2003.
Just this afternoon, a badly decomposed body was found near Point Isabel in Richmond. And last night, the body of a male fetus was found just a few miles away, if that far.
So, the worst case scenario has happened. Lacey and Connor were found in the bay.
Yeah.
Lacey's torso has washed up on the bay. And now, this is officially a murder investigation.
Yeah.
And Scott is the one and only suspect.
Yeah, because remember, in Scott's interview on December 24th, he told the cops that he went to Brooks Island on that day. 4 months later, Lacey and Connor are found right near Brooks Island. That's a huge thing to overcome, they're saying.
And it's also like, that wasn't in the press release that the burglars would have to had waited for, hoping to, like, frame Scott. So it's like, how did we know that it was going to be right where he told cops he was?
Exactly. Right. I mean, like, Scott, you just happened, like, take the burglars out of it.
Happy to. You know? happily.
You know what I mean?
I've been waiting my whole life for you to say that.
I just, like, Scott, you happened to be on the day that your wife went missing in the exact same place where her body was found 4 months later. That's mm-hmm. that's as much of a coincidence if you didn't do it as the burglars robbing the house across the street on the day that your wife went missing.
I mean,
you know what I mean? If not a bigger coincidence. It's not that unusual that a house got robbed around Christmas in a high crime area like Modesto.
That's what we're told.
You know? Yeah.
So Sharon, the investigator, not Sharon Lacey's mom.
Yes.
But Sharon, the investigator, she basically says what she thinks happened, and she describes it as what they call a soft kill.
He either suffocated her or he strangled her, and there would be two reasons that he would choose to do that. One is that it's very quiet. Secondly, it doesn't make a mess.
It doesn't make a mess.
Yeah.
So Detective Brocchini agrees.
There's one other theory that the sister who wrote the book, what's her name?
Ann Bird.
So she's the one that was put up for adoption. She and Scott reconnected when they were adults. She was a big defender. He was staying with her. During this time that Scott's back and forth between San Diego and, like, during this exact time, he was staying with his sister a lot. And she came to believe that he was very guilty. And her theory was that Scott murdered Lacey in the pool because Scott was going to Modesto very often to clean the pool. That was he would leave San Diego to go back to Modesto specifically to clean the pool.
Now, would the pool have had water in it in December?
Yes. Yes. I don't think that they ever drained the pool.
Oh, it was an in-ground pool.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But don't you drain those too? Yeah.
No, I mean, like,
or you just put a cover on it?
My friend who lives upstate, they take a couple inches off the top and then they cover it for the winter, but they don't drain it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, that's her theory.
Right.
Which would also technically be a soft kill, because it wouldn't leave a mess. It would be relatively quiet.
Right. That's why there would be, like, quote, no forensic evidence in the house.
Exactly.
So, Detective Brocchini agrees with Sharon, the investigator. And his theory is that on either December 23rd or December 24th, Scott wrapped Lacey in that tarp. Remember those umbrellas
yes.
that we said we'll get back to? Because Scott, this whole thing with the umbrellas, he had these three big umbrellas that it seemingly wanted everyone to see that he had the umbrellas, and then he forgot to put the umbrellas in the pickup truck, remember? And then he had them, and then he didn't. And so he thinks that he was kind of using that as a distraction, where it's like, oh, if some witness comes forward and says, I saw this
Scott loading the truck,
and he'd be like, it's the umbrellas.
Because that's what they think happened, was that Scott wrapped Lacey in the blue tarp, put her in the car, then covered that tarp with the umbrellas.
Right. And so Detective Brocchini says that Scott drags Lacey's body through the house, left Mackenzie, the dog, on the leash on purpose to kind of make it seem like
Lacey had been on a walk and something happened. She got kidnapped or, yeah.
Right. Scott put Lacey on the back of the pickup truck, took her to the warehouse, back to the truck into the warehouse where the boat was.
Yeah.
Put Lacey on the boat, put the homemade anchors on her, because remember, there were five. We only have one. We don't know where the other four are. And the one that we have, there's no rope attached to it, which makes it a pretty useless anchor.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I know we're a fishing podcast, but I'm still new to it all.
Yeah.
And I know that you kind of need the anchor to be attached to something.
Yeah,
Am I wrong?
Look, we're learning as we go.
Lady anglers, help me out here.
Totally. But then Sharon picks it back up and says that, you know, he put her in the boat.
And he put the boat in the water with Lacey's body in the boat. He went out to Brooks Island and he dumped her weighted body into the water, hoping that it would never, ever come up. He tried to make this look like a disappearance.
Where he dumped the weighted body into the water, thinking it would never come back
up. And figured no one would be out there because it's a rainy Christmas Eve.
It's just, my question is, like, he didn't have to tell them that he went to Brooks Island. There's no GPS on the boat, right? He could have just said, I drove around the bay. They wouldn't have known where to look. I mean, I guess they didn't find the bodies. The bodies washed up. But they washed up. The current says that they would have come from the area of Brooks Island.
Yeah.
But he did give them a major clue as to where the bodies would be if he had dumped them.
Yeah. What I think about that is that, just statistically, we see this a lot. There's always a little bit of truth with all the lies. So, like, this is the one truthful thing he might have said. There's always a little bit, or to say, like, oh, to give them a little bit too much detail or something.
Yeah.
Like, I do think he was telling the truth there.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely was.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so right now, the cops are waiting for the DNA to come back from these remains to prove that the remains belong to Lacey and Connor.
They know it is, but at the same time, they gotta...
Of course, I mean,
dot their eyes, cross their T's.
Please.
Right.
Please. Like, honestly, like, we got it. Then let's do it right.
Right.
You
exactly.
know?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course, we need to make sure that it's Lacey and Connor. So, but meanwhile, again, also, of course, they want eyes on Scott Peterson.
Yes.
Now, they have a tracker on his truck. He's not driving the truck.
No, we don't know who is driving the
his
truck.
His brother.
His
brother's driving the truck. And Scott bought this little red Mercedes in his mother's name.
Yes.
Weird.
Yes.
And now he's just not driving the truck that he's known for.
And they are able to find him by wiretap. He's in San Diego,
which is where his family lives. So April 14th, the remains are found. It's not confirmed it's Lacey and Connor just yet.
Not yet.
April 18th, Scott is in San Diego. And what Janie, his sister-in-law, says is like, they lived in San Diego. He was always visiting there. And there was this memorial that people started for Lacey on his front lawn. And he didn't want to deal with that. So he's now in San Diego pretty often.
But San Diego's also less than an hour away from the Mexican border.
Which is why the cops want an eye on him.
Exactly. So Scott is up early one morning and the cops are following him. Now, Scott, we hear him. He's on the phone with his brother because he's going to like go play golf with his brother that day.
He's actually going to go play golf this
time. Yes.
That's the goal.
Right. Exactly.
Like, really go play golf.
Truly.
This time.
Been a while, Scotty, huh?
Right.
But he knows he's being followed.
And Scott spends the next 3 to 4 hours trying to shake this tail he's got that he thinks is media.
And he is driving worse than any drug dealer I've ever followed. I mean, it's getting dangerous. He is driving so bad that the helicopter even lost him.
One of the cops says, I've never seen a drug dealer drive this poorly.
Right. Now, a couple of things about this just real quick. Like, Scott leaves for golf super early in the morning, which is normal.
Yeah.
But it's also normal for fishing. So, like, when you get up early to do one of these events, it's a pretty early day. You have an 8 a.m. tee time or whatever,
right?
Yeah. Or going, but I guess for illegal sturgeon,
right.
Scott,
right.
Which again, I only know from Animal Crossing, but it's big. I did my research.
Yeah, yeah.
But you go really early in the morning, which is another weird thing for the timeline of, like, he's just going fishing on a whim at 10 in the morning. Like, again, my lady anglers out there, it's usually early in the day, perhaps. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Scott is being followed by the cops. We got cars, helicopters. They're not subtle.
No.
But Scott spends, they say, 3 or 4 hours trying to dodge these cars.
Yeah.
Now, I'm like, is that normal for like a car chase to happen for 3 or 4 hours?
So what's happening is Scott's trying to go play golf with his brother and he thinks the people that are following him are the media.
Right. And we hear him say it.
I think that Scott really wants to go play golf. I think he really wants to go play golf that day.
I agree.
So what's happening is he's actually is shaking them, but because they're tracking his phone, they can find him.
It doesn't
Scott
matter what
doesn't
he does.
Know that.
Doesn't
he
matter.
Thinks they're just the media and he's like somehow like they keep like having the good luck of finding him again. So like just when he thinks he's shaking them enough, they track the phone and they find him again.
Because he keeps calling his brother.
Right.
But Scott to his brother, and we hear the phone call. So Scott to his brother goes,
I don't think I should come play golf. Oh, gosh. Oh, brother. So these guys, they know I'm onto them. I stopped on the highway and they, you know, stopped behind me. I think they better skip it because I don't think I want to picture me in the press. Let's go.
Oh, gosh. Oh, brother. Which sounds so rehearsed, which also made me think of that one SpongeBob meme I learned about. Oh, brother, this guy stinks. And I'm like, he does. But the brother sounds very, oh, gosh.
I know.
Oh, brother.
Well, and Scott is saying, I can't have a picture of me playing golf on the day the remains of my wife and kid are about to be discovered.
No, you can't.
No, you can't.
But that's also not really the way we should be thinking
of
right
course.
Now.
Of course. Like, shouldn't you be in mourning? Like, they've.
And also, your asshole brother.
I know.
Or.
We're
looking for a reasonable doubt and benefit of the doubt is the argument I need to distract myself.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
But it's just like you're like the bodies of your wife and child are about to be identified. Like,
right.
It's all a really bad look, Scott. It's all just a really bad look. So,
now, but Scott is driving so erratically.
Yes.
That it's getting too dangerous to leave him on the road.
They don't even have the DNA results yet, which they need to really formally charge him with this crime. But they arrest him anyway because he's driving so crazily that someone's going to get hurt.
Like they'd arrest anyone who's driving drunk or who's like a danger to themselves or others on the road. They're just like, we got to get this guy off the road. So they arrest him as he's pulling up to the golf course.
Oh
and I'm like,
God.
But I thought you weren't going to go golfing.
I thought you weren't going, Scott.
So he's arrested and there's no other way to say it. He's in disguise.
These pictures are ridiculous. He is like tan. His hair is orange.
Yeah.
He's grown in a goatee that he's also dyed orange.
Yep.
He literally looks like Ben Affleck after like a bender.
In Gone Girl.
Yes.
But he has these sunglasses on. He's kind of smirking in these photos because we see them. Now he walks up to Detective Brocchini, Al.
Yeah.
And is like, Al, tell me it's not my wife and baby. Al is fucking over it. He's like, come on, Scott, cut the shit. You know better than that.
Thinking that they arrested him, it's all just so callous and like not anything a grieving husband and father would ever actually say.
Is this the photo of someone who's grieving?
No.
I really mean it.
No.
The photo is him fucking over it again.
Yes.
You know, it's him being like, it's so bothered.
It's a person with no capacity for empathy. Like, that's what 100%, that picture is.
100%. Now, there are reasons, apparently, that his hair is all these different colors now.
Yes.
Now, in some things, it's, Scott went swimming in a pool with chlorine, and I mean, that dyed his hair.
Scott says it's because he was trying to disguise himself from the media.
That's the other thing, which I would understand. Like, there's part of me that's like, okay, you want another hoop for me to jump through? Sure, let me fucking do my stretches and get ready to go. But, like, that I can maybe understand, okay, the media is
hounding
me.
But he looks just like Scott Peterson with a bad dye job.
Like, it's not that big of a disguise.
No.
So, Scott is arrested. Here's what they find in the car.
Jamie, we're going to have a really long three martini lunch for you to make this make sense for me, girl.
It's a little two-seater Mercedes that he just bought in his mother's name, by the way.
Yeah.
The cops are like, he was prepared for anything in that car. I did extra research about what was in it.
Okay.
He was prepared for anything in the car. He had over almost $15,000 in cash. I think he had 4 or 5 cell phones. He had several knives. I mean, he had some Viagra. He had a shovel. He had rope, a cooking grill. He had credit cards for himself, but he also had family member credit cards in the car.
Dried and canned food, a backpack, 10 pairs of socks, different kinds of shoes and hiking boots, a map to Amber Fry's place of business, an axe, a snorkel and goggles, credit cards, both his credit cards and family members' credit cards, and his brother's ID. Janie, how many fucking things do you have to explain away?
I know.
I don't. Maybe I know. He wasn't running that day because we hear the phone call with his brother.
Right.
He was ready to run.
100%.
And no one can convince me otherwise.
No. And like Scott Peterson, like, do we not have an extradition treaty with Mexico? Like, wouldn't he be back here in 10 minutes?
No, you can run to, no.
Oh, you just go, oh, you, oh,
I think, that, somebody, isn't that
Jared,
the thing?
Jared, did you see that? Somebody knows of what she speaks.
Isn't that the thing?
How many bodies have you hidden?
Zero. But I happened to Tijuana. No, isn't that the thing?
The birthplace of the Caesar salad?
I went to the place.
Oh my God, I'm dying to
they
go.
They make it for your table side.
Oh my God.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but like, okay, so
I'm
you
pretty
think
sure it, you can, isn't that the thing? Like,
I
before
guess.
They cross, whatever.
Yeah.
But he's in basically a disguise, whatever. He's changed his appearance enough. Explain all
this
of this away.
This is insane, Janie.
He
I'm
was
sorry.
Ready to run at any moment.
And like, I've heard her talk about the cash that like the mom had like taken all that money out of her checking account to put it into his account.
Like there are all these different.
But you're going to leave 15 grand in cash in your car while you go play a round of golf? Like, nobody would do that.
And this is all about running from the press.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
give
yeah.
Give
yeah.
me a
yeah.
break. Yeah. yeah, the thing about his mom is like, well, his mom accidentally took out $10,000.
Right.
And didn't want to put it back into her own account because she didn't want there to be a hold on the account.
Uh-huh.
So she gave it to Scott because he'd had bills to pay. And I'm like, that's not how
that
any of this
make
works.
Any
and
sense.
Then there's another story where it's like, oh, I sold my brother the car and that's the money that the brother gave. Why are you selling? Why are you switching out cars on us, Scott? In your mom's name.
Can
what
I tell
is going
you
on?
My notes here.
Yeah.
I said, Jamie wants us to believe that we're all silly gooses that this looks suspicious.
No.
To which I then wrote, girl, I don't know how to talk to you when you're like this.
No. Janie, you have to, I'm saying this like,
with
I'm going to try to be nice about it.
Yeah.
The things she is willfully ignoring.
Yeah.
And then in turn being so disrespectful to Lacey and Connor and their family and their loved ones is absolutely baffling
now,
to me.
If you, Jamie, you want to take the tack that he didn't get a fair trial. You want to take the tack that like,
really with his $1 million defense and his white privilege,
God,
he really didn't have a fucking fair trial.
I know.
Where is the unfairness in the trial?
There was definitely jury misconduct. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, there was definitely like, we know the jury was like getting together, talking about the case.
They were
when they
yeah,
shouldn't
the
have been doing it. They were at
okay.
the bar overheard. By people like even the judge got involved. Like there was definitely jury misconduct.
Okay,
but I'm just saying there are legal avenues that she could be going on that would make sense to me.
Yeah, this is
that
not
he
it.
Didn't do it doesn't make sense to me, Janie.
No, so the cops arrest Scott.
Yeah,
and find all of this stuff in the car, and they start driving the 6 hours back to Modesto.
This is insane.
Now on the way back, they get confirmation that the remains belong to both Lacey and Connor.
Yes.
Scott is in the back of their car.
And they literally describe him getting the news. He puts his head down and tries to squeeze out a single tear.
Yeah.
A single tear.
No shock, no surprise, no emotion, no how did she get here?
Yeah.
No, just like stoic almost.
Yes.
Now, eventually, and it's a 6-hour drive, right?
Yes.
So eventually, they stop at an In-N-Out burger to get something to eat. They read from the transcript.
And Scott goes, I'll have a double-double with cheese, fries, small vanilla shake would be great. And to me, that was an enormous red flag on the fact that the notification didn't surprise him, that he already knew the results of this from 4 months earlier, and that he really didn't care. He's ready to eat.
Now, I don't care if it was 10 minutes or 4 hours later.
Yeah.
There's an argument online where it's like, well, that transcript's taken out of context, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not in the business of defending cops and their shitty whatever. It's been a month. No, it's been 4 months.
Yeah.
You have no idea what's been going on. Like, if you're innocent.
Right.
I don't care if it was 10 minutes or 3 hours. I don't care if you talked about where you were going to go for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. The fact that he is, and he ate it all.
Right. I'm not
going to nitpick about the what and when of when Scott put in his fucking fast food order. I don't give a shit.
Because the thing that, it's just kind of funny to hear somebody say double-double, because I don't really know what that means. But I mean, like, at no point he asked for a lawyer to talk to his lawyer about finding out that his wife and kid are actually dead. Mm-hmm. If he didn't do it, you know.
Can I talk to my sister?
Right.
Can I talk to Lacey's mother?
Can we pull over? Can I talk to a fucking priest?
If he allegedly threw up with Amber's press conference, which he did not, or maybe he did with the guilt, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's nothing, okay, like, all right. So they eventually get to Modesto, and there's a huge crowd waiting for Scott.
I wrote, it's as though we're watching Taylor Swift walk out of a restaurant.
I mean, only they're out for blood.
Yeah, I mean, they want to kill him.
They're out for blood.
Yeah, yeah.
And now enter Mark Garagos, who's Scott's defense lawyer, who was auditioning for this job for months. Because
on the Larry King show.
And like, you got the gig, Mark. He picked you, Mark. He picked you. But going on Larry King every night, screaming at the top of his lungs.
I know.
Now, Mark Garagos is like, he's a celebrity lawyer. He loves the attention. He loves the press. He was campaigning for this gig for months.
Yeah. And I'm like, is he doing it for free? Because I can't imagine that the Petersons can afford him.
No, it was like $1 million. They spent a ton of money. They spent like $100,000 on a private investigator.
Oh my God.
Like, they spent money on this case.
Yeah. I mean, like, where'd the money go? Okay, great.
I don't know.
Good for them.
But you know who did get represented pro bono?
Amber. Because finally, Gloria Allred offers to take Amber's case pro bono. And Gloria was also auditioning for that gig.
I had been commenting on the case on television, particularly on Fox News, and I was very concerned. Seemed as though every day there were stories about Amber coming out. And of course, it would be and was in the interest of the defense and supporters of the defense to undermine her credibility.
She's afraid the key to the defense is going to be to undermine Amber's credibility, to assassinate her character, because she's the key witness for the prosecution. And I'm just glad that Amber has an advocate. I'm glad
of course she's got,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That she's got somebody like to be between her and the fucking media.
Yeah. Now, the case was moved to San Mateo County because the story was too, everyone knew and hated Scott.
But still, like, anywhere in the world he could have gone and everybody didn't know the same thing.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, I don't really know. But that's like, how many times do we run into this? It's like, what's the answer?
Yeah.
Because I would love to know the answer.
Yeah. You know, I used to always say I would take a bench trial. Like, if I was on trial for murder, I would take a bench trial because the judge at least knows the law. And if I'm innocent, I would trust that the judge. I met an attorney somewhere along my travels this summer who was like, don't do that.
Why?
I don't remember what the reasoning was, but she's like, no lawyer would advise you to do that.
Interesting.
Don't take a bench trial. Because like, juries are more reasonable. They'll weigh the evidence, you know, whereas a judge can be very black and white. They can have more preconceived notions than a jury would.
Oh, interesting.
You know? Yeah.
Did you get her number? Just in case.
No, but if you're out there, DM me. So just in case.
I just like
I'm not counting on murdering anybody, but you never know.
It doesn't matter if you did it or not.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
That's the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Always call a lawyer.
You're right.
Hello?
I need her number.
I've been screaming into the void this whole time.
Wait, what do I do with the half and half when I'm done with it?
I don't even like half and half. I don't know why I'm like a crusader for the...
It's because you're thinking of Steve. You're just thinking of Steve.
I guess. So we're here with two jurors.
Greg and Mike. They're the ones that are in every single documentary.
Yeah, and Mike is the blowhard, loudmouth who can't wait to speak. He's one of those people who doesn't listen. He just waits for his turn to talk back at you.
Yeah. Greg, I always make the note, looks like Greg Brady. Like, he looks like Barry Williams. He looks just like him, like, to
this day.
Which
one was Greg?
Greg was the older brother.
The older brother.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
What?
It's the Brady Bunch.
Okay. Want to talk Dick Van Dyke? We can do Dick Van Dyke. Brady Bunch, kind of, I miss that a little bit on my Nick at Night reruns.
Yeah, he looks just like him today. His name is Greg and he looks like Greg Brady.
But does he look as much like Greg Brady as Christine Taylor looks like Marsha?
No, because those two were created in a lab and that will will never make that work ever again.
Those Brady Bunch movies are so good and funny.
Yeah.
Like the ones from the 90s with RuPaul.
So good.
Like, they're
so good.
My boyfriend, George Glass. Interesting. I don't know a George Glass at our school. And Mike and I always say all the time, oh, my new boyfriend. Jan says that. My new boyfriend. Those
That's
movies,
great.
Iconic. They're so good.
I saw it in the movie theater.
I don't know if I did. Maybe I did.
I saw the first one in the movie theater. Shelley Long, are you kidding?
A fun double feature is the Brady Bunch. Davy Jones, they have Davy Jones coming back. It's really, they're really good. If you need like a good palate cleanser,
yeah, it's great.
Get the end of the Brady Bunch movies from the late 90s.
So anyway, these two guys are here.
Anyway, so they're here.
You know, it's interesting because Greg had barely heard about the case. And the guy, Mike, I kind of liked what Mike said here. He was like,
I promised myself one thing, that I would do everything I could to assure that this gentleman got a good trial. I mean, I'm looking at this young man and I'm saying, I've got a son about his age. I looked at this guy and I said, no way. You know, show me what you have. Convince me.
Convince me. These are the exact people we want on a jury.
That's innocent until proven guilty.
Exactly. 100%.
Personified.
Yeah. And Sharon, Lacey's mom, is saying she went to the trial every single day because she didn't know much about the case. The police couldn't tell them anything. Mm-hmm. So she had to be there every single day so she could learn what was known because it was the only way she was going to get information.
Right. So the trial starts a year after Scott's arrest. That timeline is really fascinating to me that it was a year. But Sky told us something kind of like a bombshell about how that timeline relates to Amber Fry.
Oh, get thee to the Patreon and hear our interview with Sky. I'm telling you, it's a good one.
It was gaspable.
Yeah, it was gaspable.
It put things in perspective. Like, the context of the timeline is also really important, and also, like, the weight of what Amber was carrying all this time. It's just, like, it really kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
So the trial starts a year after Scott's arrest. They were going to have over 100 witnesses. Not one of them were the witnesses that saw Lacey, allegedly.
No, but even the defense team is saying, even to this day, they say there's no direct evidence linking Scott to the crime. The prosecution cannot say where the crime occurred, how the crime occurred, or when the crime occurred.
Yeah.
I mean, that is interesting to think about.
It is.
You know?
Now, this was not televised, so it was up to all the journalists to tell the story. And again,
which,
like,
I wish it had been. You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
I really like the idea that we can all participate. Not for the salaciousness, but I would have loved to have seen how this trial unfolded.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, we didn't even really get into the level of the media circus.
Right.
Because this was happening.
I mean, we're talking about it 20-something years later. Like,
right. But this was, like, right at the forefront of the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
So, like, the Nancy Graces of the world were talking about this, like, endlessly.
Constantly.
I mean, we said that, like, Nancy Grace went from being just, like, a little bit of a loudmouth to, like, Scott Peterson broke her. This case sort of turned Nancy Grace into... And even then, you watch the footage from back then, and you're like, what was so wrong with what she was saying? Now she's, like, a caricature of a caricature,
Yeah.
But this was all they were talking about. They were vilifying Amber Fry. So that's another reason why people say that it was kind of an unfair trial, because the whole world hated him.
Yes,
so
he could not get a fair trial. I mean, that doesn't. Sorry, you shouldn't kill your wife, but there was no way. At the very least, Scott was not going to get a jury that didn't know who he was. There was no way.
Yeah, and so it's interesting. I wonder if that played a part in it not being televised. I think that the laws are like state by state or whatever,
and it's court by court because this is California, where like OJ was, that was televised.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's like this
it's up
case
to the judge, I believe.
That was so televised until it wasn't.
Yes,
it's just kind of an interesting to think about because the media played such a major role in this case until it really got into the courtroom.
Yeah, right, because like that's what Gloria Gomez is saying. Like, we were there. Gloria's like, I went every single day. It was my job to determine what the headline of the day was.
I know.
You know?
Well, let's talk about it, because the state messes up right away, the prosecution.
My God. This is fucking huge.
So the state is saying, the prosecution is saying that Scott lied about watching Martha Stewart with Lacey the morning she went missing. Remember, it was like, oh, Scott was like, she was talking about meringue. Martha Stewart was talking about meringue.
Yeah, and the prosecution is saying she was either already dead or this just never happened. He's just making up he's inventing a morning.
Right. Now, the defense plays the video.
So what are we going to do with all the egg whites, Jory?
Ooh, you want to make little meringues?
Oh, that would be nice. Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, Martha Stewart mentions meringue.
She literally, like, we watch it happen. I've seen this clip 100 times.
Now, what's interesting, though, that I found in my research is the episode the day before, Martha Stewart says meringue, like, 28 times.
Oh, really?
So there's a theory that Scott was remembering the meringue the morning he killed her, not the morning. Because it's weird that it's like, oh, there's that one time she said, because she says it as like, maybe I'll make meringue with it.
Yes.
But the episode the day before was like the meringue special.
The theory is what?
That Scott was remembering another time he was or like, it doesn't really prove what the defense thinks that this fuck up is proving.
Well, except, I mean, look, a happy accident or not, like,
whatever.
It's there. It exists.
And it's like, how do you make this mistake so early on, prosecution? How do you not watch the tape yourself?
That's more the point. It's less that there's this throwaway mention of meringues in the episode and more like, how did the prosecution not just watch the episode?
Right. So it's like, it kind of doesn't matter, even though it's like interesting to go down the rabbit hole of, wait, she said it a lot the day before.
Yeah.
Like, that is kind of interesting. Like, is he remembering the day before?
Yeah.
Does that matter? Because human memory is weird. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, like, I'm sure there's, like, a think piece out there. Like, how many times does she mention meringue every single day?
But she really did the day before one time. And it's like, Scott's a dingbat.
Yeah.
Why would he just hear it? Or maybe he's like, that's a weird word. I thought it was a dance or whatever. Like, I thought it was music. It's not merengue. It's meringue.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the point is, the prosecution, absolutely, it's a major win for Scott.
Yes,
because
for sure.
It makes the prosecution look like a bunch of dingbats.
Yes.
Now, Detective Brocchini is one of the first witnesses. And he says to us, he's like, Sky, I do this all the time as part of my job. And he goes, when I'm on the stand, I turn to the jury and speak to them. A lot of people do this. We see this in the coverage that we've done, documentaries. People turn to the jury.
Yes.
I wonder if I would. I think I would.
I absolutely would not.
I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, I would be afraid to look at them.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
But not
if you're testifying in your own defense, if you're like an expert in someone else, or if you're like a character witness or something.
I would feel self-conscious. Like, I would feel I was trying to make myself look smarter. I would feel condescending to that jury.
Oh, interesting.
You know?
I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, I would look straight in front of me.
Now,
but Garagos, the defense attorney, is not having this.
Garagos, like, look at me! Look at me when I'm talking to you! And I looked at him, and Destasso, everybody's like in shock. And Destasso's, I object, Your Honor. He can look wherever he wants when he's talking. And he asked me another question. And I started turning. He goes, you're afraid to look at me. I mean, he's screaming at me.
The way Brocchini describes it, it's like Best in Show. He's like, don't look at those losers. You look at me. Remember that? What he's saying to the dogs?
Yes.
The way, honestly, Brocchini is like raising his voice.
Yes.
Like, he was screaming
this
at me.
Brocchini. Do you know what I mean? Like, it broke him.
Don't call him out.
Yeah. But the thing is, there is a big thing that happens in this testimony.
So Garagos, the defense lawyer, the $1 million like celebrity defense lawyer, has what he thinks is this major smoking gun against Brocchini.
Yeah.
So he's also, it's all like, it's a lot of theater by him. Like, don't you look at that jury, which is also like, Garagos, can you fucking relax?
Can you calm down, girl?
My God.
Yeah.
What's next? A big red Corvette to show what a man you are? And you know, it's just very like, what's with the peacocking? What's going on?
Yeah.
Don't you look at those lizards? You look at me. I got to watch Best in Show now. So, but there's like this big smoking gun. There's like hubbub, hubbub.
Yeah.
Like, they go back and
discuss it.
They discuss it with the judge. It's like a lot of theater, right?
Yes.
Like, will Garagos be able, he has everyone, and it's kind of masterful because he has everyone in the courtroom like, what's he going to say?
Yeah.
This must be really big.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. Brocchini had dictated a police report. He spoke to, quote, a neighbor of Scott's shop.
So with the warehouse, where Scott has his warehouse, they spoke They spoke to somebody else who had a shop in the same area at the warehouse.
Now, Brocchini dictates, John Doe said that he heard through the grapevine that Lacey used another neighbor's bathroom.
Yes.
Now, the defense plays the tape of Brocchini saying that in the dictation.
Meaning, the point of this is that Lacey would have been at the warehouse, and this was either on December 20th or 23rd. So the idea is this was after he bought the boat, so maybe the boat wasn't a secret.
Right.
If this happened.
Now, when they compare it to the police report.
So when I was testifying, he plays my tape and it's typing at the same time. Then he puts my police report up there, same thing, types it out, but that one line is gone. And everybody in the courtroom is like, ooh, like that is really, I'm hiding evidence.
Meaning he left out the bit about Lacey having used the bathroom at the warehouse.
Now, that's all we know. A gasp. The whole courtroom gasps because it does look shady. And you're thinking, why would he delete that? Now, this is when the defense says, Judge, I think we should call it for the weekend. Who are you to decide our schedule? But the judge is like, you know what, Garagos? I like the cut of your jib at 1,000%. Now the entire week, everyone leaves on this big gap. Because remember, it was like, is Garagos going to be able to show this? There was like a lot of talk, said backstage, in chambers.
In chambers.
So like the entire weekend, the jurors and the press are ruminating over the fact that Brocchini totally lied and withheld evidence.
No, I want to double down on what this evidence was, because what it was evidence that Lacey had been at the warehouse after Scott had the boat, right?
Yeah.
Which would be important because one of the major things for the prosecution is saying the boat was a secret. He bought it in secret so he could kill Lacey in secret. But if she was at the warehouse, she would probably have seen the boat, right?
I would love to know the map of the warehouse.
So what Brocchini is telling us now is that he took that out of his report because it was hearsay.
It was from through
him.
The grapevine is what he said on the dictation.
This actual detective, Dennis Holmes, said, no, wait, I actually interviewed that woman.
He's her like, are you talking about Peggy?
Peggy?
I met her.
I met Peggy, and he got Peggy to say whether or not Lacey had actually been there and used Peggy's bathroom at the warehouse where Scott works. And here's what is actually in Dennis Holmes' report. This is a quote from Peggy. Lacey Peterson had come to my business and asked me to use the bathroom on 1220 or 1223. I believe it was in the late afternoon, but I can't be sure. Lacey Peterson was at the warehouse. She was at the warehouses after he purchased the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is big information or not, but the prosecution's been trying to paint this picture that, like, Scott's life at the warehouse was completely separate and Lacey was never there. And we know that she at least was there one time after he had
the boat. Well, her hair had to get around those needle-nose pliers somehow.
Yes, exactly.
So she was there in some way, whether it was on the boat or some other way. But what Garagos is doing is making it this bump, bump, bump moment. But the point that Brocchetti is making is like, no.
What happened was on this one day, after I dictated, turn it in, now we all sit down together and I tell all the detectives what I heard. And Detective Dennis Holmes, he says, whoa, I interviewed Peggy. So he could testify to what Peggy said. Mine was through the grapevine. And so I deleted that sentence because it was in his report.
I'll keep it in my report so I can testify about it.
Exactly, because I actually spoke to the person.
Spoke to her.
Yeah.
So, like, apparently that's all it was. But, of course, it looks bad, and it's another big win for the defense.
Because it looks like he deleted evidence that Lacey knew about the boat. You know what I mean?
And it's also like, wait, Garagos, then lean into Lacey knowing about the boat then.
Right, right, exactly.
Like, why do the theater?
You know what, though? Because I do think it, like, the point is made that this detective lies. That's all he's trying to say.
That's all it is.
This detective lies. He could have planted evidence. He could have made this all up. He just didn't like Scott.
And he was playing the long game. He always knew he was going to waste time in chambers and suggest to the judge, let's just call it a day. What do you think? And the judge is like, you know what?
Great idea.
I'm tired. It's 5:01. I want my dinner on the table. Whatever.
The other thing, too, is that the prosecution isn't able to nail down a time of death. Ted, the reporter, is saying to us, what sucks about that for the prosecution is that it opens the idea. It opens the door. The defense is able to say, well, what about the idea that somebody kidnapped Lacey because she was pregnant and they wanted the baby.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So there's this whole thing about, like, Connor's age.
Right. Like, was he born before Lacey died, or did he die inside of Lacey when Lacey died?
Yeah. And it's like, it's hard to talk about, but it's also like that science doesn't really exist.
Right. You can't know.
So we can't know.
Right.
So you can't, no matter what side you're on, you can't really, like, hang your hat on that.
But it's leaving it open. Like I had said earlier, it's not Scott who. Well, they're painting a theory that it could have been somebody who kidnapped Lacey for the baby.
Right. And so, you know, we have the meringue win. We have the Brocchetti's a liar win.
Yes.
We have this fact that the lack of science can kind of make it go either way.
Like, yes.
It's looking really good for Scott.
Yep.
And Amber Fry is here to change all of that. She's the star witness for the prosecution. Now, the defense is going to say, and they still do, yes, he had an affair, but he's not a murderer. You can hate him, but you can't convict him. And again, is he a greedy slut or whatever the quote is from last time? Like, that, I mean, we see that a lot, right? Like, our own defense is like, if I could punch this guy in the face, really, I would.
I hate my own client, but he didn't kill this person.
That's kind of what they're doing here in response to Amber Fry. But they're going to do it by assassinating her character.
So Amber comes in and she's saying to us now,
the first day of trial and walking in the courtroom, it was completely packed and as silent as can be. And when I first sat on the stand, I wasn't just sitting there alone, but I was sitting there for Lacey and her unborn child.
I was sitting there for Lacey and her unborn child.
Right. And like everything she's been through over this year, which has been a lot, is like she's doing it for her. And like that's why she and Lacey's friends had this moment and continue to through the trial, because again, everyone wants the same thing.
And also Amber's gotten tough. Like she's toughened up a bit.
I love this moment.
She's sitting on the stand and she's telling us now how much she was enjoying getting under Garagos's skin. Mm-hmm. Cause like he would ask her a question.
Again, he's
like,
screaming at everyone, quoting Best in Show.
Exactly. He's asking her if Scott ever said, I love you. And her response is, well, not in words, but in gestures and in actions. She says she didn't answer him straightforwardly, because it was, in her opinion, it wasn't a straightforward question.
Deal with it, Garagos.
Deal with it, Garagos.
But this is also the moment I love is when Amber's like, let me tell you something. I'm not a mistress. Look it up. A mistress means that she willingly had an affair with a married man.
And knowingly.
Knowingly. knowingly. And she's like, that's not the case. Scott lied to Amber like he's been lying to everyone else. She was tricked. She was lied to.
Yes.
But the thing, the major bombshell to all of us and to Amber is that in the trial, they played the tapes of the phone calls that she recorded with Scott.
And she never knew that that was even an option. She had no idea that was ever going to happen.
Which is like, but why didn't anyone, like, that's why we were doing this, right?
Exactly.
Like, why didn't anyone, right. I mean, I don't know. Even after the fact, in this whole year, they couldn't say, like, Amber, when you testify, we're playing these tapes. Like, did they prep her? Like, that seems wild to me.
Well, and the thing that's, we were talking about this with Sky, just in my brain, I realized as soon as it's entered into evidence, it's public information.
It's public.
Anybody has access to, any one of us can get these tapes.
It's interesting watching Amber now because she is having a reaction to it today as she relives what it was like to hear those tapes be played for the world.
Yeah.
And she sort of like catches her, she like swallows a word, like you can hear it in her voice that she's having like a physical anxiety reaction.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
Amber,
yeah.
I know exactly what she's going through, but like, imagine what that was like for Amber to go through everything that she had to go through. Again, like, she told the cops on December 30th that she saw Scott. And by the next day, he was lying to her at the vigil about Paris. And she nailed every syllable of those phone calls.
Yes, she's
and then
perfect.
A year of she's a mistress being vilified by the Nancy Graces of the world. And then no one told her that all of these personal conversations, like, of course, I mean, it's going to stick with her forever.
Yeah.
As she's telling us today.
It's true. The reason these tapes are so important is because Scott chose not to testify, but we still heard his voice incriminating himself on these tapes.
Right.
And they were essential. They were absolutely essential to the jury understand, because the jury is saying to us now,
a lot of people believe that the affair was a big deal. No, I didn't see it as a big deal, and I don't think anybody on the jury did either. What we did see as a big deal is what he said and what he did. It was damning. It was absolutely damning. And not only the phone calls, but the lies.
Yes, the charade.
It was the charade. It was the deceit. They understood his character, that he's the kind of person who would be capable of murdering his wife and then just lying to everybody in his life about it.
Again, if it was just an affair, it would hold more weight to he's a piece of shit, but he didn't do it.
Right.
But it's the affair end. It's the affair is one of 100 things.
Compounded by the fact that he bought the boat on the day he told Amber he lost his wife.
Come on.
And that's just one example.
It's like everything has layers to it.
Yeah.
It's like the Amber Fry's existence in some ways is like, it doesn't matter. But it's like, but then because if you peel back the layers, more things come out. And again, if it was just one affair, that would be different. But now we're adding it to a list of things that, like, I just can't ignore.
I mean, it's just like the thing that comes to my head is that, like, the bodies of his wife and son were exactly where he said he was on the day that they went missing.
But yet the burglars who didn't know that waited for 2 days hoping that a way to frame the husband would fall into their laps. And then it did. And then they went to the bay that is crawling with police and media and went, like, come on.
I mean, that anecdote is the new we're here because we're here. Robert Durst asked
but
to make
really
a movie about himself.
Like, think about it, though. And it's like, I just can't get by, like, all of these hoops we're jumping through.
Yeah.
For him, when I just feel like it's so rude and disrespectful to do.
So we're with Sharon, the profiler, and she's just saying, like, the thing that is the most shocking about all of this was Scott's belief that Lacey's friends, family, and the general public would lose interest in her disappearance in a few short weeks, and he would get to go on living this new life that he created for himself.
He just thought he would lie his way through it.
Yes.
Because he's lied his way through his whole life, basically. I mean, he was cheating on her before.
Right.
We've got, like, there are stories from her friends that he was cheating on her before. Like, none of this is new. This is who he is. He's the he was the golden child in his family. He got away with everything his entire life.
Yeah, I mean, and Sharon, the profiler, lays it out. She says Scott's behaviors are what told us that this is planned, premeditated homicide. He told Amber he lost his wife, that he then needed to be away, and that when he got back, they could start their life together.
He bought this boat in secret. When he came home on the 24th, her car was in the driveway, her purse was in the closet, he did laundry, he ate pizza, he took a shower, and then he called Lacey's parents.
There's no urgency. There's nothing taken from the house, nothing damaged or disturbed. Like, Lacey would have just wandered off, and he has no care in the world about it.
And then it's like, how many things? So it's like, yes, if you wanted to find ways to defend all of those, like not calling her parents. Okay, not everyone goes to 100, right? Maybe he thought she was coming home when he was in the shower, or like selling the car, the house. Oh, it's all too painful. He can't look at the car.
Turning the nursery into a storage room.
Like, okay, like the shit in his car. Again, like, see what happens. Like, how many things do we have to explain away? Because it's like all of these explanations for every little thing, but none of it comes together to form a coherent, cohesive theory to an alternate situation or crime.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Like that, that's what I can't get by. One thing, I'll be like, you know what? You have a point.
Yeah.
But for every single thing, then what's the answer?
Right.
What is the other thing that happened?
Yeah.
And it's like he, and when you compound that with, to steal your word, because I like when you said compound, like this is not a unique case, which pains me and sickens me to say, but like there's part to me that's like, if you look like the Crypt Keeper, would we be here? Because we're not doing this with Robert Durst.
Right.
Which has the same amount of evidence, really, if you're thinking about it.
I mean, the Durst case to me is a little different because he does eventually just start admitting to the murder. You know what I mean?
Sure, and Chris Watts admitted to it. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. But like all of, like, this has happened before.
Right.
And like all, every other time, it's like rightly screaming about he's a narcissist and fuck the patriarchy. And like, you can butt me all day.
Yeah.
But like, I don't give a shit. Like, I can't do it. And also, there were another thing I found in my research, which is going to blow your mind. Did you know that this Petersons had their own tip line?
No.
They had their own tip line, and there were things that would come in that would go against Scott, and they actively wouldn't send them to the police. And we know that is because the police did a test call and put in a
made
tip.
Like a fake tip.
And they never passed it on to the police.
No.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
I know. And it's like, it's Mike the juror that sums up what you're saying, because he says,
you know, the Scott Peterson case, you can't take a part of it and look at it and say, aha, because there is no aha moment. But you take the bits and pieces and you put them all together, then it draws a picture. It paints a portrait.
Take all the circumstantial evidence and put it together, and it paints a picture.
Right. Circumstantial evidence is evidence. DNA is also circumstantial evidence.
Yes.
Direct evidence is an eyewitness testimony.
Wait, DNA is circumstantial evidence?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That's what I was saying before. It's like, you can't no but me or yeah whatever me with 200 pieces of circumstantial evidence and then want the DNA tested, which I will always support in every case, and then rely on the kind of circumstantial evidence that you like, but not the other kind. It's not how it works. It's just not how it's gonna work at all.
No, I agree. So the jury gets the case, and then like bada bing bada boom, there's a verdict.
And everyone is in a panic.
Because everyone gets, like, we don't know how long it took for them, but, like, everyone's gone. It wasn't the same day. They only get 90 minutes to get back to court, and they're going to read the verdict.
Right. So, Scott Peterson is found guilty on both counts for the murder of Lacey and Connor. And Sharon, Lacey's mom, is like, you know, was I happy? No. Like, no one's happy, but she felt relief in some way, which I understand.
You know, what I do really hate, I gotta say, is that I've seen this so many times, the video of the Peterson family being marched in front of the mob out in front of the courthouse.
I hate a courthouse mob. I hate celebration over a verdict.
Not even a celebration. It's like they're screaming at Scott's family, saying "Burn in hell!" Like it's not okay.
People just they just lose themselves, and that's it.
There
and
needs
it's not
to be
right.
A better way to get his family out of there.
Yeah, take them through. Yeah, it's not right.
Yeah,
you know, because they're celebrating. It's a bad look all around.
Well, then we go to sentencing. And again, it's not televised, but we hear about Sharon's statement and she's directing Scott directly. Mm-hmm. And I could only write down a little bit of it. I couldn't write down everything she said.
Face to face, I remember her looking right at him.
Many in the room began to cry as Lacey's mother, Sharon Rocha, asked if Lacey knew she was being murdered. Then she imagined Lacey's unborn baby begging for its life, saying,
"Daddy, please don't do this to me."
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot more that she said that is just too fucking sad. I can't say it myself, but it's really fucking awful. And, you know, Sharon is saying to us now, like, she may physically be gone, but she's not gone in our hearts. She's still with all of us.
Yeah. So Scott is sentenced to death, and her friends and family tell us that they sort of see their life as like before he killed her and after he killed her and Connor. And they all stay close and they check in a lot and they think about and talk about Lacey and Connor all the time. But this is like, we talked about this with Sky and the friends are saying like, you know, we check in more.
Oh,
we have those tough conversations. Like
we
kind of know more about where our whereabouts are. Like we, you know, and now I feel like that happens more often now. Like the text me when you get home, the sharing
and
a location.
And you know, it's different. The world is just different than it was in 2004, like we, or 2002. Like we weren't like, the texting wasn't a thing like that back then.
Right. And so now they like, you know, they've been forced to look at their own lives differently and have tougher conversations in ways that they didn't before, you know?
Yeah.
And we learn here, which is going to, I mean, like, we learn this fact that pregnancy not only increases the risk of victimization for women, but it is the number one cause of death for pregnant women. It's like homicide is the number one cause of death for pregnant women.
That was my question, because I like read that a bunch of times. So she's saying the homicide is the number one cause of death for pregnant women.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. Like that, I mean, is that, it's one of the most like gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
To really put it into words like
it's
that.
It's weird
and think
that after
about it.
8 years, this is the first time we're hearing that statistic.
Yeah.
You know, and we're back with like Sharon, you know, Lacey's mom, and she's just saying that like Lacey would have loved raising her son and she would have been a great mom. And, you know, we would have had more stuff to tease her about. And this killed me. She said she's been gone almost as long as she was here.
Yeah.
And you know, Sharon knows the date when that will happen.
Of course.
And I, like, I was thinking like I could do the math, but I actually can't take it.
Because Sharon says,
I just want her to be remembered as a person and not as a victim of murder. She was alive. She's still alive to all of us. I see dragonflies and I think of her.
She's alive to all of us. I
know.
I see dragonflies and I think of her. Yeah. And like, you know, she loved her husband and Sharon says she trusted her husband and he betrayed her and he betrayed her and he betrayed everyone else.
Yeah.
And Sharon says that she's heard from so many women who left in time because of Lacey. And then Sky has the end title card. And this is where Mike was like, are you okay? And I was like, no.
I know.
And it says, and she, every line, like, it, she doesn't say this all at once.
Yeah.
It just says, for Lacey and Connor, and the ones who left in time, and the ones who didn't.
Yeah.
And it's just like, having all of these women here to tell the story and have her friends and make a point to show that they also helped Amber out too. And like, I just like, I think having that is so important, and having Lacey's mom, Sharon, talk about how women have reached out to her. I feel like we just did this when we were talking about Anna Abulamon. Like, tell your friends.
Yes.
We will never shame you for being right. Who gives a shit?
Yes.
Nobody
yes.
cares. Nobody's yeah. here to tell you I told you so.
Yeah.
Like, nobody. So those hard conversations that Lacey's friends are learning to have, as much as we share locations and text me when you get home, and I do that all the time with my friend, like, we still need to be doing, like, that can't ever go away.
Yeah.
Like, we have to have these hard conversations.
And
because
it can't just be women. It's got to be the men in your
lives.
It's got to be
everybody.
You know what I mean?
No, of course.
Yeah.
It's got to be everybody. And, like, don't, like, settle ever for
right.
anything.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. Like, everyone is just, like, so, it's just, like, it ended on such a
beautiful,
powerful, like,
yeah.
note here. So it ends by saying, since Scott's conviction, Janie Peterson has obtained a law degree in an effort to fight for her brother-in-law's freedom. On August 24th, 2020, the California Supreme Court overturned Scott Peterson's death penalty sentence, citing that his jury was improperly screened for bias against the death penalty. So Scott was resentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
Yeah. So that's where the documentary ends.
Yeah. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about the Los Angeles Innocence Project.
So tell them why.
So Scott right now is being represented by the Los Angeles Innocence Project. It is not affiliated with the Innocence Project.
Yes. This is a very important distinction.
And so from the Innocence Project website, it says, on January 18th, 2024, the Los Angeles Innocence Project filed motion seeking DNA testing and post-conviction discovery on behalf of its client, Scott Peterson. Any and all inquiries about Mr. Peterson's case should be directed to the Los Angeles Innocence Project, a nonprofit organization wholly independent of the Innocence Project.
Yes.
The Los Angeles Innocence Project is totally banking on the fact that people think the Innocence Project has taken on the case, which gives it a ton of credibility.
Yes.
Or people are losing respect for the Innocence Project and canceling their donations, which I also saw, which is a big fucking problem for me.
Yes, yes.
So, because regardless of what you think about this case, on its face, this is manipulative and shady.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you defend him, but like, they are deliberately being confusing. They want the confusion. I think that's disgusting.
Yes.
And if you believe in your cause so much, like, don't play dirty.
Yeah, and like, just to be clear, what the Los Angeles Innocence Project is banking on, what they want tested is a mattress that was found in a burning van a couple of, like, a mile away from the Peterson home the day after Lacey went missing.
So
and they're saying that there was a mattress in the back of the van that maybe had blood on it.
So they wanted, like, 12 things tested, ranging from a mattress to a dead bug that was found. The judge said no to 11 out of the 12 things. The judge granted testing for one thing, which is a 15 and a half inch piece of duct tape that was on Lacey's body when she was found. So there's a latest order. Like, we're recording this in September. Any day now, the results are going to come back. But here's from Court TV. It says that the latest order states that Pure Gold Forensics, Inc. will conduct the DNA testing, because there was a big argument about, like, an independent place to test it. Like, they went back and forth, which I think is important to make sure, you know, who's testing it. It also states that the DNA testing shall be conducted within 45 days of this order or as soon as practical. The final results are also submitted under seal. So I don't know if it comes back. Like, the 45 days seemingly was up like yesterday.
Yeah.
So I don't know if under seal means we'll never hear about it or when we will. The tape was tested. This duct tape that was found on Lacey's body when she was found in the bay was tested in 2003. And it showed human DNA present, but it wasn't like a good quality to get a profile.
Oh.
So I think they're trying to do what they're doing in the West Memphis 3-6 case, which is like use the MVAC to really like pull more, because 2003 is not 2024.
Yeah.
So Scott's lawyers are saying that the tape could contain DNA that points to someone other than him responsible for Lacey's death. But I'm not really sure like what that would do. I mean, Lacey was found a long time after she was murdered.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely clear on like what they want here.
Like, unless the DNA profile matches a serial killer. You know what I mean?
I'm not really sure. Like, are they hoping that it'll match the two burglars or something? Because there's no way, like, if Scott's DNA is on it, it's game over, no?
Right. You would think. I mean, right?
And I don't know. I mean, it's 15 and a half inches. So that's the one thing out of the 12, I believe, that the judge said they could test. And so we're waiting. Like, we might have to do a pickup for this. Like, it's happening like any second.
Yeah, we'll keep on it, fam. As soon as we hear anything, we'll let you know.
But I also, you know, I spent a little more time on the Innocence Project.
Yeah.
The Innocence Project, not the LA Innocence Project website today. And on their FAQ, there's a question: how many innocent people are in prison? And the answer is, we will never know for sure, but the few studies that have been done estimate that it's between 2.3% and 5% of all prisoners in the U.S. are innocent.
Wow.
But they continue, and I'm glad they did this.
Yeah.
Because it says, for context, if just 1% of all prisoners are innocent, that would mean that more than 20,000 innocent people are in prison. So it's more than that. It's almost double that.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, if you want to nitpick about unfair trials and circumstantial evidence, that's amazing. We need you.
Yeah.
We need you. There are tens of thousands of cases for you to choose from. Most of them are people of color who don't have the privilege that Scott Peterson had. But to me, my personal opinion on this is like, I want justice for everyone. I will never have a perfect system. That's the goal. I hope so. Our system is fucked.
Yeah.
But like, Scott Peterson is not special. And to take up this case, I when I was thinking about it, I was like, you're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah.
Move on. This is not, there are tens of thousands of cases for you to choose from that have just as much reasonable doubt or circumstantial evidence.
Or more.
And to me, it just seems like seeing that statistic, and I love that they said for context, 1% is 20,000 and they think it's 2.5 to 5.
Wow.
Which is like, there's a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to be done. And I just think there are better. It's like when we were talking about Robert Durst. Remember at the end of it where like then something was vacated? Oh, because he died. And it's like, this is the guy we're going to do by the fucking book.
When there's a black
kid who had some weed on him and now he might never see the light of day again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yes, 100%.
Like that's the case. Oh, God, no, Cheryl. We got to get Durst vacated. Like that's how this case was made. Towards the end of it, with all of the facts and all of the statistics, it's like, we got to do better than this.
Yeah.
We have to do better than this, everyone. Please, God, I can't take it anymore. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens with the DNA. If there's an update, we'll jump on. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we'll do a drop or something. I don't know. But like, who knows what's going on.
Girl, we did American Murder, Lacey Peterson, Sky. What an incredible documentary.
It was,
you know, our interview with director Sky Borgman is live right now on our Patreon. We get into all of this. We get into Amber. We get into theories. We get into, you know, I have a million questions. We talk about the circumstantial evidence. I even asked Sky directly, was there reasonable doubt? We get her theory of the case.
You ask her about the burglary straight up.
We talk about the burglary a lot. So it's right over there for everybody at the 5 or above. Girl, what are we doing next?
We are doing Uneven Ground, the Melissa Witt story.
Ooh.
So this is also the same people who did Still Missing Morgan did like a 4-part thing on Hulu.
Oh.
Which, according to my sources, which are our wonderful listeners, is that it was like pretty drawn out and nothing really happened. So there's a documentary that's like a one-off. So I figured we got a lot going on the Patreon.
Great.
Instead of doing a 4-part one that our listeners didn't love.
Yeah.
There's this like one-off doc that was sent to me. So
amazing.
Well, thanks to the listeners. I'm in my DMs all the time. I have a list from everyone. Like, they send me stuff. And so I'm on it. So thanks everyone for making this like a group effort of what we're doing and how and when. And I love like the dialogue about it. So thanks for sending this to me.
Well, we love you, fam. And we will see you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you soon.
All right, bye.
Bye.
It's kind of an eye-opening experience, I think, to know how careful you have to be. We think we're often protected here in the small town of Fort Smith.
Fort Smith's like any other city its size. We have different types of crimes. We have bank robberies. We have homicide. I don't recall that happening with someone like Melissa Witt.
I think the longer it goes by, they haven't found her, that it's not that. I think it's something else.
Taken to a place that is so remote that you can go there and scream anytime at the top of your lungs, anytime, day or night. Nobody's going to hear you.
The person that did it, if that person is still alive, needs to understand we're still here and we're still coming.
One time it served me right. I left the half and half out on the counter. Golden jumped up onto the counter, knocked the whole thing over, and then just drank most of the bottle.
And then, like, probably had to go to the bathroom.
It was not a pretty afternoon.
Yeah. No, it wasn't.
No, my own fault.
Look, choices were made. So, in addition to that, the last title card says, it's not a title card at the end, it's like an end card, but I always think of it as like, sorry, Sky. I'm sure she's like, Jillian, that's the wrong term.